think, Simon, about where is the weight of evidence really lying now with Brexit? And it's very hard to ask this question because if anybody has an opinion one way or the other, then, you know, it seems in some ways there's so much speculation, so few facts. It's very hard to be definite. But what's your sense and feeling?
Well, I think that, unfortunately, for those who don't have strong feelings, the Brexit campaigns have been a bit of a disaster, to be honest. I think that if you already knew what you thought, then it's been an opportunity to get more of what you thought. But if you're in the middle, and there are a lot of people in the middle, I've had a lot of questions from friends, family, colleagues, readers, saying we just don't trust any of this stuff that we're being told by either side. So where are the facts? How do we make our mind up? I mean, it was described brilliantly, I think, by one of the columnists in the Investor's Chronicle last week as like two sides shouting past each other, which I think pretty much accurately summed it up. And there hasn't been, you know, the leaflets and the claims on the leaflets that we've got through our doors. Me and Lee have spoken about this before. Seriously dubious quality, some of the stuff going on there.
From both sides.
And you've got the Chancellor and the Prime Minister promising war, pestilence and falling house prices. And then some of those things, for example, the pound might fall, inflation might rise, house prices might fall, interest rates might have to go up. Well, if you said that to a lot of people, they might say, well, actually, I think some of those things are quite good. We quite like cheaper house prices. We think interest rates should go up. As far as I was aware, most of what the Bank of England's doing with monetary policy at the moment is actually designed to get inflation to rise anyway. And one of the things that they don't talk about in the inflation reports is the fact that also some of it goes towards keeping the value of the pound down because they don't want the pound to go up. So it's very difficult to put your finger on this. And I wrote my column about this week. And what I've done in there is just linked to a selection of articles, I think, where people have written informative, balanced things from either side. You know, should we stay in? Should we leave? And I would say to people, there's still just under a week to go. There's time to sit down, and if you haven't made your mind up, or even if you have made your mind up, there's time to sit down, spend a bit of time carefully reading some of this stuff, and come up with a measured decision about which way you think you should vote. Because ultimately, it is quite important, and it does matter, and it deserves the time that you can give it. What it doesn't deserve is the unedifying spectacle that we've seen from both the Remain and Leave camps.
And it has been, you know, entertaining on one level, but very depressing on another, Lee, hasn't it? That actually, you know, Simon mentioned this, that what people want, understandably and rightly so, they want some information. And now some of the information is going to be very hard to come by, if not impossible. Mm. But all we've had ever since the referendum date was launched, it was announced, is just basically lots of shouty politics, haven't we? And more heat, but very little light at all.
I think it's been a real shame, actually, because on both sides of the camp, the arguments have just been a little bit wrong for me. You know, they've gone too hard on certain things that, to me, just don't make sense. And like Simon, I have so many friends and family asking me how I'm voting Brexit, how they should vote in Brexit. They're in the middle. They want to know some facts about both things. And it's actually really quite difficult to find these facts. And that's why Simon has written his column this week and pointing to some information on both Leave and the Remain sides. And it's very good. It is worth reading and getting yourself armed up with that knowledge, because we are very close now to the vote. But two things I will say about Brexit, and I mentioned this before when I was on. I mean, a massively key word for me is the word could. So there's a lot of, like, you know, this could happen. Pound could go down. House prices could fall. They could rise. We just don't know. We just don't know what could happen if we left the EU. It's really difficult to put your finger on it. Number two, I think we really, really reached peak Brexit mania this week with the whole going down the Thames on boats and shouting at each other. And when Bob Geldof got involved, I mean, it really is surreal. People must be looking in from other countries going, is this British politics? What is this? What has this come to?
How did we ever let them into this club in the first place? Probably thinking. But also, Brexit campaigner Priti Patel was saying that Mark Carney, Bank of England governor, just employing scare tactics and it's a partisan move. Is he just doing his job and warning when he thinks things may, you know, there may be problems? Or do you think there is some politicking involved, Simon?
So I actually have an element of sympathy here with Mark Carney. A part of Mark Carney's job is basically financial stability, and that's part of the Bank of England's remit. Now, it would seem abundantly clear to me that if part of your job involves financial stability for the UK, the most likely course of action in order to have financial stability would be to maintain the status quo, rather than taking a big leap off into the unknown. I don't think that anyone could deny that that would create more volatility and create a more unstable situation. And I think that he has in a relatively measured way, you know, pointed out the risks. Maybe he hasn't made enough of the fact that there could be some benefits down the line, but nobody really knows what those are. And the best report that I've seen on this in terms of the long-term economic outlook was the one commissioned by Neil Woodford's firm from Capital Economics. And that basically came to the conclusion that they couldn't see any long-term economic argument for either Remain or Leave. And that ultimately, over the short term, there'd be volatility. Over the long term, it would probably iron itself out. I mean, the one thing that we do know is trade. Trade is the issue. Britain is a great trading nation, has always been a great trading nation. And if we vote to leave, we will be voting ourselves out of probably the world's best free trade bloc. And so I have always wondered, do people on the other side of the world look at us and think, are they absolutely insane? You know, why would you vote yourself out of that? Or do they look at it and think, well, the problems of the EU are so big, and the big issue with the EU at the moment is the Eurozone, and the only way that the EU and the Eurozone is going to try and deal with that problem is by going for closer and closer and closer unity, and that's going to fall apart. And I think someone described it as better to be sitting in a lifeboat in the Channel watching that rather than being involved in it. So I don't know, didn't know which way this was looked at, but I actually got the chance to ask someone a question about this yesterday at dinner. As you know, fund manager, works in Asia, worked out in Asia for 23 years, and I said, what's the view over there? Has this even registered? And he said, to be perfectly honest, over in Asia, it hasn't really registered at all. And the people aren't talking about it. They don't pay that much attention to it.
Which probably tells you all you need to know. But, well, here's Remain campaigner Hilary Benn arguing that, partisanship or not, the economic arguments for Remain are stronger.
The evidence from all of the economists, the surveys, the Bank of England, the IMF, the IFS, all of them say, and you know how rare it is to get economists to agree on anything.
Well, there are some dissenting voices.
Well, they're very few and far between, indeed. And we just heard Michael Howard talk about Australia negotiating a trade arrangement with Europe. What he neglected to point out is that the Prime Minister of Australia, the Prime Minister of Canada and of New Zealand, along with a lot of other world leaders, are calling on us not to leave. And what is absolutely clear is it is a great risk to vote to leave the European Union. All the analysis that's been done says that the economy will take a hit, yep, and that is going to affect, above all, people on the lowest incomes. And damaging our economy, damaging trade, investment and growth, our security, our influence in the world, isn't going to help deal with any of the problems that we face.
So last thought then, Simon, before we leave this topic, as you say, 6 days. Are we actually going to get any more facts between now and then? Are we going to get any facts, do you think, or is it too late for that?
I don't think, as I said before, I don't think it's too late to go out and find some facts yourself and, you know, sit down and read some stuff that's measured. The other thing I'd say is read things that you don't agree with. Read the point of view of the side that you err against, and weigh those things up as well. And I think there's a lot to be said for better the devil you know. But then imagine if all of the world's, you know, inventors and innovators and entrepreneurs had thought that as well. We wouldn't have had a great deal of progress. But I think for a lot of people, the economic arguments are important, but I think a lot of people are going to vote on a question of immigration and sovereignty. So, you know, maybe some of the economic facts and figures that we're talking so much about won't be the thing that decide it at the end of the day.